Hundreds of cities in southern Brazil's Rio Grande do Sul state are underwater, suffering the effects of historic floods caused by all-time high river levels. As of Tuesday afternoon, local authorities had confirmed a death toll of 90 people, with another 132 missing. More than 200,000 people have been forced to leave their homes, and these numbers are certain to continue rising over the coming days. Experts are already comparing the path of destruction and its effects on the local health system to the Hurricane Katrina catastrophe in 2005 in New Orleans. And beyond the human toll, the disaster has had massive effects on the local economy, affecting agriculture, logistics, commerce, infrastructure, and everything in between. In today's episode, we will discuss the extent of the crisis, how this climate catastrophe came to pass, and what could have been done to prevent it. My name is Gustavo Ribeiro, editor-in-chief of the Brazilian Report, and this is Explaining Brazil. If you like Explaining Brazil, you should subscribe to our website, which is the journalistic engine behind this podcast. You can also go the extra mile and make a donation to our newsroom, buying a cup of coffee to one of our journalists. And God knows, reporters live off of coffee. Our biggest enthusiast has been a reader called Carson Allen, who has made multiple donations of dozens of cups of coffee at a time. So Carson, thank you very, very much. And for everyone else there, be more like us. And you can also subscribe to our Buy Me a Coffee fan page, pledging a monthly contribution to our newsroom in exchange for exclusive content that you will not find anywhere else. And our Buy Me a Coffee subscribers are, besides, of course, Carson Allen, Wild Rice, Jaciada de Oliveira, Gabriel Luca, Andrei Novoseltsev, Hen Ludwig, Leslie Seal, Mark Hillary, Luis Hans, Aaron Menez, Aaron Berger, Paris Resvig, Alasdair Townsend, Miller Henacido, Peter Abrahamson, David Dixon, José José Stankovic, Emerging Market Newser, Anna Lund, Peter Suffren, Anderson da Silva, and someone who chose to remain anonymous. And if you too want to support independent journalism, go to buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can just flash the QR code on the bottom right side of your screen. Go to buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report. Thanks for supporting us. This week, I'm joined by Ewan Marshall, deputy editor of the Brazilian Report. Ewan, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Gustavo.
So, Ewan, news is coming thick and fast from Rio Grande do Sul as more destruction takes place and the death toll rises further. But if we could just start by zooming out a little bit, can you give us a timeline for this tragedy, if you will?
Yeah, sure. So Rio Grande do Sul is Brazil's southernmost state. It's way down there on the border with Uruguay and Argentina. It's an area just maybe roughly the size of Poland. So this is quite a big area that we're talking about here. And this current tragedy, we can date this back to April 27th, which is a week and a half ago at the time that we're recording. And so that's when storms started to hit the state, and they didn't really let up for days on end. Rivers began bursting their banks, and that led to widespread flooding, which only got worse and worse. And the death toll began increasing, and then the number of displaced people got out of control. And at this point, you know, state authorities are saying that some 1.3 million people have been affected by the floods. And the way that this catastrophe has progressed is largely down to the geography of Rio Grande do Sul and exactly where these major rainstorms fell. Because rivers, there's lots of rivers in Rio Grande do Sul, and they link the state cities up from the kind of the higher altitude regions, you know, Brazil's wine country, down to the state capital, Porto Alegre, where the metropolitan area of Porto Alegre is home to about 4.5 million people. So what we've seen is a kind of like a delayed destruction. The overflowing rivers in these higher altitudes spread down to the highly populated coast, leaving Porto Alegre and these other surrounding cities underwater.
And as I mentioned before, the current death toll, by the time we were recording this, stands at 90 people. Which areas have been hit the hardest?
Well, I think this is another important aspect of this catastrophe, because usually when we see these storms, these extreme climate events, they affect relatively kind of concentrated areas on the map. Here, the 90 deaths that have been recorded so far have been spread over more than 40 different cities. And that's affecting almost all of the kind of the macro regions of Rio Grande do Sul state. And so unsurprisingly, because it's so spread out, that's really affected rescue efforts, because there's so many critical points across the state and there's limited personnel. If we had to single out somewhere as being like the epicenter of the disaster, you'd look to the Vale do Taquari, which is in the center of the state. And there we saw lots of small rivers overflowing and feeding massive amounts of water into the Taquari River, which burst its banks and left large areas underwater, because lots of the towns in that region are actually built in the floodplains. And there's not sufficient protection there against, you know, when river levels get that high. But then again, you also have the capital, Porto Alegre, and many of the state's major rivers flow towards that city. The Guaíba River, which runs beside the city, it's at an all-time high level and is unlikely to go down anytime soon.
So, Ewan, what has caused all this destruction? Because like most extreme weather disasters, flooding involves a number of competing factors that may affect frequency and intensity. How this tragedy came to be and how has it gotten so bad?
Well, I mean, basically, the weather experts at the moment are describing what Rio Grande do Sul is going through as meteorological hell, essentially. Of course, we're not weather experts, but to try to explain this in as simple terms as possible, we have a cold front coming from Argentina in the south, and that is meeting warm air coming from the Amazon in the kind of to the north, maybe the kind of northwest direction, and that causes heavy rains. But instead of these heavy rains dissipating after a while, the storm clouds have essentially been trapped in Rio Grande do Sul because there's an area of high pressure to the north of the state, which basically stops the rain from leaving the state.
Yeah, so it's like this area of high pressure in Brazil's southeast and center west has created a sort of barrier, meaning that humidity basically can pass through it. I mean, that's also why us in São Paulo have not been seeing a drop of rain for weeks. Temperatures are high, much higher than they are usually at this time of the year. I mean, we have had a steady 32 degrees Celsius every day for the past week or so. And I mean, this is the middle of fall.
Yeah, and while this persists, while this heat wave persists in São Paulo and other parts of the southeast, it's just going to keep raining in Rio Grande do Sul. So that's meaning that the state has just seen more and more showers and the river's just getting higher and higher.
Right, so you're mentioning the weather factors that have contributed to this tragedy, but that's not the whole story, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really just this unlucky combination of weather factors, because we've seen extreme climate events becoming much more common in Brazil. In 2023, the country recorded a total of 1,161 natural disasters. And much of that was put down to the intensity of the ongoing El Nino weather phenomenon, which involves the heating of waters in the Pacific Ocean and it drastically changed rainfall patterns. And I mean, we've seen the south of Brazil, this same place that is being affected now, face deadly rainfall as early as 7 months ago, when an extratropical cyclone hit the region. So, you know, this idea of more heavy rain here just hasn't come out of the blue.
And beyond the human toll, which, I mean, has been massive, and it is the worst aspect of this crisis, of course. But we also have to mention the economic effects of this crisis, which are pretty huge, and that impacts private companies that impacts governments, local and federal. I mean, the state capital, Porto Alegre, is underwater. Rio Grande do Sul is a major producer of rice and soybeans, and crops must be feeling serious impacts from this massive torrential rainfall, right?
Yeah, so if I can just give you a quick rundown of the disruption. There are 450,000 homes without electricity at the moment in the state, 649,000 homes without water, dozens of cities without internet or a phone signal, some 790 schools are closed, 41 highways are partially or fully blocked, and the airport in Porto Alegre is underwater. And some shocking footage of the city of Porto Alegre, including the city's airport, just under, you know, a reasonable bit of flooding there. So it's chaos at the moment. And you can hardly imagine how businesses around the state would be able to open under those conditions. You know, so the local economy is more or less completely on hold at the moment.
Yeah, and we have been seeing many cases of bluthing as well. So that's another deterrent for commerce to open. Now, agriculture is a big question mark here, right? Because like I mentioned, Rio Grande do Sul is an important producing state, and it had already been suffering from yield losses over the past few years due to droughts. So the polar opposite effect of what we are seeing now. Not only do you have facilities themselves experiencing floods, but with those logistical problems that you mentioned, like closed roads, closed airports, how are producers expected to get their products to market? And how are they expected to receive crucial inputs and materials?
Well, yeah, I mean, around one third of the state's chicken and pork factories, to give you an example, they've had to shut down. Some of these have been owned by big export leaders, you know, BRF and JBS, which some people might know. But so, you know, imagine the situation that they're in. They can't receive the animals that they want to slaughter. They can't send meat to places where they're going to sell the meat, to consumer centres, and they can't get any animal feed from grain warehouses, which themselves are completely cut off. Some places have had to ration the food that they give to their herds. We haven't yet had reports of, you know, major animal deaths or things like that, but, you know, it's around the corner if the situation continues like this for much longer. Some groups are saying that it could take some 30 days for the system to go back to normal.
And soybeans is a major industry in the state. Rio Grande do Sul is not necessarily a massive producer like Mato Grosso and other states in the soybean belt, but it still grows about 15% of Brazil's soybean output. And 15% of Brazil's entire output is a lot because Brazil is the world's number one soybean producer.
Yeah, and I mean, the forecasts aren't good. One local analyst suggested that 2 million tons of soybeans will be lost due to this crisis, though there are some other estimates which are a bit more conservative. But it's important to bear in mind that we're not just thinking about soybean crops as well. There's also the matter of the grains that are being stored in these flooded warehouses. And also grains that have this kind of higher moisture level are typically sell for less. So it's a real worry for the sector in Rio Grande do Sul. And then, of course, you mentioned earlier, there's rice, which Rio Grande do Sul is a major grower of rice. And that's something that, of course, is present on the table of almost every Brazilian household, you know, on a daily basis. And the federal government is already talking about potentially needing to import rice due to the disaster, which is something that's really not common in Brazil at all.
Yeah, and I mean, a few weeks ago, and we discussed this in this podcast, the number of farmers filing for bankruptcy protection had gone up in recent months. So we should be seeing the ripple effects of this crisis over the next few months. And I mean, Ewan, you mentioned earlier that Brazil South has already faced severe heavy rains and floods in September of last year. Does that mean that the extent of these floods could have been mitigated? I mean, were there any alarm bells being sounded by experts, by meteorologists?
Well, I think when you get something of this magnitude, and, you know, as we described earlier, these three different factors of weather coming together to cause something this severe, I don't think you can necessarily predict that, but Brazil as a whole could be doing a lot more to safeguard its cities from the effects of extreme climate events, especially considering, as we've discussed, that they're becoming more and more common. But Brazil has been basically ignoring the warning signs. For instance, the 1.2 billion reais that the federal government budgeted for disaster prevention policies last year, that was the lowest in 14 years. For this year, Rio Grande do Sul state cut its budget for disaster mitigation services by 7.5%, and none of the federal lawmakers from Rio Grande do Sul used any of their parliamentary earmarks to pay for any environmental conservation services or disaster prevention or anything like that. And also the city of Porto Alegre, which we've seen is underwater at the moment, the state capital didn't even spend a single penny on flood prevention last year.
No, and what you're saying reminds me of something we have written about on the Brazilian Report's website, which is about the fact that the federal government commissioned a study in 2015 about the future of climate in Brazil. And actually, that study warned that the country may face dramatic climate conditions by 2040, which is just around the corner. They cite that violent droughts may prevent hydroelectric plants from generating enough power, which could have massive impacts on inflation, on Brazil's productivity. Crops could see a reduction of up to 39% in their area. And I mean, rising sea levels would expose real estate worth up to 124 billion reais to a high risk of destructions. And that is just in the city of Rio de Janeiro. Not to mention that more elderly people would die from heat waves, especially in the north and northeast regions, which are the warmest in Brazil. I mean, a lot of that we are already experiencing. And still, the study was published without much fanfare and has been largely ignored since. And we have had multiple administrations since that study came to be. And I mean, now that the catastrophe is all over the news and being widely discussed, then there seems to be no shortage of resources being thrown at the issue. But I mean, we have been seeing in Brazil a lot of discussion as to how we're going to earmark this money. Governor Eduardo Leite of Rio Grande do Sul asked for a Marshall Plan-like aid package. I mean, what are we talking about here in terms of figures? And is that a long-term concern? Because we have passed the past few weeks discussing whether or not the government would be able to meet its fiscal targets. So now we're having that crisis adding more pressure to the finance ministry.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the federal government will be careful to make sure that it is, you know, seem to be providing as much resources as it can to this particular crisis, while not leaving itself in kind of proper trouble for the future. But I mean, we did see some discussion among analysts saying that it might be Congress that we need to watch out for, because the standard practice in a situation like this would be, you know, Congress opening up these kind of one-off spending mechanisms, like an emergency credit, these sorts of things that they can pass quite easily in Congress, and, you know, it's a one-off thing. But there is a concern that Congress could kind of take advantage of this situation and maybe bring in some like constitutional amendments, and that means that, you know, it just erodes budget controls for the future, makes it quite complicated for the government going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, the new fiscal framework, the ink on it is not even dry at this moment. It was passed just last year. So, Ivan, with all this tragedy and chaos, what's next for Rio Grande do Sul? What are we expecting for the coming days and weeks? We have seen many government officials traveling to the affected areas. So, I mean, what could we expect now?
Well, again, as we mentioned earlier on in the program, I think the geography of Porto Alegre, the state capital, and the way that the Guaíba River flows into the Atlantic Ocean, it's going to take some time for things to normalize. There are some local authorities saying that the river levels in the state capital are going to take around 10 days to drop to below emergency level. So, I mean, the actual the extent of this crisis is going to be much longer than just maybe a week or a couple of weeks. And also, there's even more rain forecast for the rest of this week. And officials are worried about another cold front that will be coming in from the south. And the fear there is that, you know, there's so many people who have been displaced. So there comes, you know, a lot of risks of hypothermia and things like that when there's a lot more people on the streets potentially.
And donations have been rolling in from all over the world. If our listeners want to help, what should they do?
Well, for people in Brazil, the Rio Grande do Sul state government has set up a crowdfunding channel where people can donate however much they like via Pix, the country's instant payment system. But of course, for those who are outside of Brazil who don't have access to Pix, there are a couple of different options of, you know, NGOs and social movements who can accept donations in euros, dollars, and, you know, pounds. And also the state government of Rio Grande do Sul has done something similar. They've set up channels which people can donate money in foreign currencies. And we'll make sure that we link to all of that information in the show notes for anyone who wants to donate.
Ewan, thank you very much. Here's hoping that the worst is already behind us, and our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Rio Grande do Sul. And if you like Explaining Brazil, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. Or better yet, you should subscribe to the Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We have a subscription-based business model, and your memberships fuel our journalism and keep us going and growing. And our work has been recognized for its quality. We have won and been shortlisted for several international awards. And most recently, the Brazilian Report was named the best news website in the Americas for a small or local newsroom by the World Association of News Publishers, One IFTA. To continue doing this work, we need your support. Go to Brazilian.report. I'm Gustavo Ribeiro. Thanks for listening. Explaining Brazil will be back next week.